Is Friday, January 25th. It's about 1:35 p.m. in the afternoon. We have a quorum to conduct business. Senator Huggins is here, Senator Terrio, Senator Wilikowski, myself, Senator French. We've got three bills on the calendar today. HB 151 is the first of those. It's held over from a meeting we had on Monday. There is a committee CS on your desks. The difference between the CS that we are considering and the bill underneath it is a total of, I think, four words that appear on the first page. Lines 12 and 13 would now read, the provision must include an apportionment of the indemnification, defense, and hold harmless obligation on a comparative fault basis, period. That's the way it will read. Should we adopt the new CS? The other versions had the words where there is joint liability afterwards. So that's the difference. If someone would move the CS.
I move version November.
Without objection, that's Senator Terrio.
Just a quick question. Was the changed language worked out with the prime sponsor? Are they in agreement?
We have a representative from their office, but my understanding was that this was exactly from their office at their request. Please put yourself on the record and welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I'm Jeannie Osnes. I work with Representative Craig Johnson, the sponsor of this bill. And yes, the agreement was to take those words out at the bottom of page one on version N.
Thank you.
I think it was just seen as surplusage by the drafters and by the sponsor. Senator Wilikowski.
Oh, I was just going to ask that question. Does it change the bill at all by taking those words out? Was this something legal requested, or?
I think through the discussion that the committee was having and through legal, that it just seemed to end some of the discussion that lawyers would have with more words.
Without any objection, then, / N is the version before the committee. There was, during the hearing last week, which was on a holiday, some question about reaching out to governmental entities that might have an interest in the bill and how they were affected by it. Senator Huggins, did you have anyone who wanted to comment on the bill directly?
Yes, there are potentially two people, Mr. Arzenbrenner and Mr. Kraft.
Very good. We've got folks signed up to testify, and Mr. Kraft is one of them. He is on the off nets, unless there's something else from the sponsor.
There was some question about the legislative intent, and the intent of the legislation from the sponsor was to address professional services contracts. And you'll see that on page 2, line 25 of the CS. That's where it refers to professional services as defined by the statute, and that's the state procurement statute and within the definitions. Number 19 of many in that definition sections. Professional services means professional technical or consultant services that are predominantly intellectual in character, result in the production of a report or the completion of a task, and include analysis, evaluation, prediction, planning, and recommendation. And that's AS 3630990.
Ms. Austin, thank you for the explanation. Further questions based on that explanation? Hearing and seeing none, let's go ahead and turn then to, we have three individuals who'd like to weigh in on the bill. And let's begin with Mr. Kraft, who is on the off nets. Mr. Kraft, can you hear me?
I can hear you, and if I could, I'd like to allow Mr. Ashenbrenner to speak primarily on behalf of the borough. He has a lot more information in terms of what were our concerns on this issue.
That's just fine. You're free to select whom you would like to speak on your behalf. Mr. Ashenbrenner, then, are you there?
Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. I guess I'd like to begin with...
Sir, if you just go ahead and put your name on the record and then let us know who you're affiliated with, you can proceed.
Yeah, I'm John Ashenbrenner, the Deputy Mattsu Borough Attorney. Again, Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak to HB 151.
And Mr. Ashenbrenner, let me just interrupt you one more time, and I'm very sorry to have to do that, but Senator McGuire joined us a few minutes ago, and the record needs to reflect that. So now we are all ready to hear your testimony.
Thank you. I guess I'd like to start by bringing to the fore that under the Alaska Constitution, the structure that the framers placed for municipalities under Article 10, Section 1, is to, and if I could read it, the purpose of the article is to provide for a maximum local self-government with a minimum of local government units, and to prevent duplication of tax-levying jurisdictions, and a liberal construction shall be given to the powers of local government units. As such, municipalities are tasked with providing a myriad of services to the public, and the contracting, in order to bring those services to the public under the Alaska Constitution, really should be afforded the maximum flexibility in order to carry that to fruition. The negotiation of the contract and the specific provisions that are put in the contract is really part of the process of reaching a meeting of the minds between the government and on the local level and those contractors. By having a mandated specific indemnification clause that must be used in professional services contracts really runs counter to allowing local government to carry out those services. And I really question whether or not this legislation is really supportive of local governments or distant insurance companies. Second, my concern is that the application of this clause, as it's presently written, and I understand the sponsor spoke to it briefly, if it were adopted, could be applied in situations where professional services are provided in contracts which are hybrids, like a design-build contract. If you look at the plain language of 3630990, which the sponsor spoke to earlier, which says professional services means professional, technical, or consultant services that are predominantly intellectual in character, result in the production of a report or the completion of a task, and include analysis, evaluation, prediction, planning, or recommendation. And then the definition of construction under the bill, under subsection 1, in those situations where you have a design-build contract, I think under the plain language of the bill as it's presently written, might lead to the conclusion that municipalities could not use protective indemnification clauses that are widely used in construction contracts. So I'd ask the committee to consider that, and if it goes forward and applies this to municipalities, we'd ask, first of all, that municipalities be exempted, or at least speaking on behalf only of the Mat-Su Borough, that it exempt the Mat-Su Borough from this provision. But secondly, if it is going to be adopted, that it be made clear, hopefully, that this is not intended to apply to design-build contracts. Those contracts are ones that I think save, and my colleague here, Mr. Kraft, could speak to that, but it's my understanding that design-build contracts save the public money, both in time and just cost. And then finally, I have a concern about the language of the portion of the statute that talks about comparative fault basis and how that would be construed, perhaps by a court. Of course, this will be litigated, and whether or not it might be construed as obligating the government in a joint liability claim situation to indemnify and defend the contractor. The language, the beginning of the indemnification, of course, speaks to the idea that it's the contractor, the consultant, shall indemnify and hold harmless the contracting agency. But then it says, for this portion of it, if there is a claim or a liability for a joint negligent act, error, or omission of the consultant and the contracting agency, the indemnification, defense, and hold harmless shall be apportioned on a comparative fault basis. I would hope that that was not construed to mean that there was a cross indemnification. If there were that, if it were construed that way, I believe under an attorney general's opinion from 05, that would necessitate an additional appropriation by the legislative body, both at the local level and at the state level, and additional costs for the government. That's all I had. I'd be glad to try to answer any questions, and I don't profess to be an expert by any stretch on these issues, but those are some of our concerns. Thank you.
Mr. Ashenbrenner, thank you. Questions from the committee for Mr. Ashenbrenner? I have one, and that's just, and I'm certainly less of an expert than you are, but I'm curious about how, on a comparative fault basis, either side could wind up indemnifying the other for something that they didn't do. Isn't that exactly what comparative fault's about?
Well, you raised an interesting question, and that's one that I've been trying to struggle with regard to the question of whether or not this could be sort of cross indemnification. I don't profess to be an expert. If there's a claim, trying to flesh this out, if the municipality or the government is to provide a baseline for soils or other information to the designer on the design of a building, and then the eventual claim relates to both the design and those soils, I wonder if, as those claims played out, if the designer would assert that it's being pointed at for damages that really flow back to the government agency, and therefore, to the extent that it has to defend against claims of its design that flow from the earlier problems in the soils, then the government should have to defend and indemnify it for those claims. Not sure exactly at how it would play out, and it's always difficult to sort of place hypotheticals and understand how things will play out in the future. Maybe that's not a concern. And again, I'm just raising them. I've had a brief time to look at these issues. The bigger ones, I would say, for the borough are that if it were to pass, that it clearly not apply to design, build, or hybrid situation contracts, and in general, just applying a contractual provision mandated throughout for all professional related contracts. I think it's pretty hard to have a crystal ball and see how all professional contracts are going to be let for all time in the future, and then to say that this specific provision is appropriate in all contexts.
Senator Wilikowski has a question.
Is this language, this indemnification language in here, very different than what you currently use right now?
There are a variety of clauses. In the past, the borough has used more protective indemnification language than this, more akin to general construction contracts. So I would say in some respects, we've used in some contracts, and I should probably really let Mr. Kraft speak to this, I think we have used some indemnification clauses that look similar to this with some comparative fault type language. And so I would say the answer is yes to some degree, but certainly there has been flexibility and stronger language has been used in a variety of contexts.
I could follow up, Mr. Chair.
Please.
I guess what I'm trying to get at is what is the impact of this bill if we enact this? Do you see this having a financial impact to Mat-Su Borough if this bill is enacted?
I think that boils down to predicting, you know, how the litigation is going to play out. And, you know, if you use a clause which has less protective language, then, yes, I would think that the costs of litigation are going to go up, because in those cases, the contractor is not going to have as broad of an obligation to indemnify and defend the local government, or the state government for that matter.
Follow up? Mr. Ashenbrenner, thank you for testifying. We've got two other folks who would like to testify about this as well. One of them is Nelson Page. Mr. Page, can you hear me?
Senator French, yes, this is Nelson Page.
Thank you. If you'd put yourself on the record and who you're affiliated with, we'd be happy to hear your testimony.
Yes. For the record, my name is Nelson Page. I'm an attorney in private practice in Anchorage. I'm representing myself today, and I wanted to testify in favor of this committee substitute. I represent a lot of design professionals all over the state. It's probably the largest part of my practice right now. And the indemnification clause issue is probably the hardest thing I have to deal with my clients. I am familiar, for example, with the clause that the Mat-Su Borough uses. And basically, that clause or similar clauses requires a design professional to accept all legal and financial responsibility for any error of any party to the contract, even if the other party was 99% responsible and someone else besides the design professional was responsible for the other 1%. I usually recommend to my clients that they not sign these clauses, but if you get a party on the other side who won't amend that clause, my client usually has to make a choice. They either sign that clause at gunpoint and accept huge risk, or they have to turn down the work. I think it's important to point out that this is a kind of risk that can't be insured for. So this is not something that the design professional will be able to get insurance for, because usually these insurance coverage will cover negligence of the design professional, but not contractually undertaken obligations. So the design professional who signs this takes on a huge risk, may not even know they're taking on this huge risk, and has no ability to actually defend themselves from it, because it's a contractual obligation. There are a couple of things that I think this committee substitute does that are actually in favor of the contracting parties, the people who are contracting with the design professionals. One of them is it just allocates responsibility fairly. I believe that Senator Wilikowski was asking questions about how this works, and essentially the bill will just mean that if you are responsible or negligent and cause damages, you're going to be held responsible to the extent of those damages. The bill simply applies that to government entities and local government entities as well as the design professionals. Second, to the extent that the statute makes it easier for design professionals to bid on projects, I think the state and local governments are actually advantaged, because they're going to get better bidders. Frankly, the smarter design professionals are the ones who are not going to bid on a contract that has this kind of a clause. And then finally, I think that to the extent that design professionals are putting extra amounts in their contracts to cover for this additional risk, you might even find that this clause has a good effect on how much the government pays for its design services. That's all I have to say. I don't know if you have any questions.
Questions for Mr. Page? I don't see any. Mr. Page, thank you for taking the time to testify this afternoon.
Thank you, Senator.
Next up on the list is Mike Carlson. Mr. Carlson, are you with an earshot? Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Please put yourself on the record and state your affiliation. We'd be happy to hear your testimony.
All right. I'm Michael Carlson with McCool Carlson Green Architects in Anchorage, Alaska. And I've been practicing architecture in the state for over 30 years now. Moved up, started in 76. And most of our practice, but bulk of our practice, is with governmental agencies, state, local boroughs, and federal government. And in fact, the Mat-Su Borough is one of our very, very good and favorite clients. We love working with the Mat-Su Borough. Over the last year or so, I've been in four separate negotiations regarding indemnification clauses. Two of them with the Mat-Su Borough and two of them the University, Fairbanks and UAA. And I'm here to speak in support of HB 151. I think it's the closest thing we can get to just making everybody responsible for their own mistakes and negligence, which I think is the right thing to do, and it's good public policy. On the we're designing the replacement for the Sioux Valley School, and during the RFP process, we were very close to having to withdraw our proposal because the borough's RFP required an indemnification clause that Nelson was talking about that we just couldn't get insurance to cover, no matter what we spent. And the risks to a business like ours just seemed unacceptable. Fortunately, at the last minute, the borough issued an addendum which allowed for that clause to be discussed and negotiated, and eventually we came to some hybrid language which was reasonably acceptable to us. But it is language that is, to a certain extent, new. And I think part of the advantage of this HB 151, getting everybody on the same page, is that if we have consistent language that all parties understand and that can be interpreted consistently throughout the courts, then in addition to everybody being responsible for their own actions, I think everybody has a much better, much more common understanding as to what their responsibilities and obligations will be in the case of any sort of claim or action. So I think it's a good bill, and I really encourage you to move it on and support it.
Mr. Carlson, thank you. Questions for Mr. Carlson? I don't see any. Next up is Leanne Boldnow from Marsh, USA. Ms. Boldnow, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Please put yourself on the record, state your affiliation. We'd be happy to hear your testimony.
Great. I appreciate the opportunity, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, to speak today. My name is Leanne Boldnow. I work for Marsh, USA as an insurance broker, and I have sat on the committee for the Alaska Design Professional Council and on the contract task force. And I'm calling in to provide balance in the testimony today in support of the sponsor of this bill. I have represented more than 30 design firms around the state and have continually reviewed poorly written contracts that are uninsurable, as Nelson reflected in his testimony, by the indemnification clause and wording in the contract. One example I'd like to point out is design professional insurance will provide defense when the consultant negligent acts, errors, or omissions are tied to their work, as their work is truly intellectual property. It's typical to see public entities publish contracts that reference general construction in the contract, and a design professional, because their work is intellectual property, cannot guarantee or warrant or certify their work. So my recommendation as insurance broker is the contract is uninsurable. And so we find that many times the design professional, like was referenced earlier by Mark Carlson, that the firm must work outside of their insurance program and take that risk. So those are the two main points of the bill, and I also wanted to point out it surely is working with the task force on this bill and with Representative Craig Johnson. It sure was not their intent to allow a building contract or otherwise morph into this design contract and thereby secure provisions from House Bill 151.
Ms. Boldnow, thank you. Questions for Ms. Boldnow from the committee? I don't see any. Those are all the entities who had signed up to testify. Is there anybody else in the room or online who'd like to testify on HB 151? Hearing and seeing none, I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony on the bill. Is there committee discussion? What's the will of the committee? Senator Wilkowski?
No, just discussion. All right. I guess this, when you look at this bill on its face, it doesn't seem real particularly interesting or exciting, but it presents, to me anyway, I think some really interesting different things that collide against one another. You've got this concept of fairness that I think we all agree with. Each party should bear their own cost of their negligence. I think everyone agrees with that. At the same time, that clashes with the free market, the ability for municipalities, for agencies, local subdivisions to go out, negotiate the contracts that they want. And if they can get a party to negotiate to accept their liability, then under the theory of free market, that's not a bad thing. And then again, this you have another thing that is colliding with this, and that's the inability of the designers to get insurance. So it's just been an interesting discussion to me. I don't know that that helps the committee any further.
I'm so glad we could entertain you. It's good when the issues. I mean, it is a lively issue, and I agree. You and I had a spirited discussion about this sort of clash just recently. To me, it boils down to a question of fairness. And there's certainly many other points of view. Other committee discussion or debate. Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just procedurally, has the CS been adopted?
It has, moments before you walked in, but we adopted it at the beginning of the hearing. The bill is before us, and
I'll go ahead and make a motion if the committee is complete with discussion.
I think we're ready.
Okay, so I move that we move Senate CS for House Bill number 151 /N out of the Judiciary Committee and onto its next committee of referral.
Is there objection? Hearing and seeing none, the bill is moved from committee. Let's take a 60-second timeout for the paperwork.
Thank you.